Welcome to another edition of El Paso Primetime. I'm Dennis Wu, and today I'm joined by co-host Noemi Rojas. Top of the afternoon and welcome.
Hi, Dennis. Today I bring to you the CEO of El Paso Children's Hospital. His name is Larry Duncan. And also joining us today is his wife, Mrs. Dawn Duncan. Welcome to the show.
Thank you both.
Thank you.
Tell us where you're from, because you took on the position of CEO in 2012?
Actually, 2010. We moved down here in July of 2010 from Milwaukee, Wisconsin, where we had spent 14 years there, and I worked for the Children's Hospital of Wisconsin at that time.
So Wisconsin, what a big difference. Can you tell us how El Paso's been treating you since you've been here?
Well, I'll speak first, and then Dawn can speak as well. But what I told her, I came down a few weeks before the rest of the family, that it was the most friendly, hospitable town I've ever been to. I've never lived south of Cincinnati, Ohio before, so this was a big change for us, certainly from a weather perspective, which was a welcome change, getting away from 3 feet of snow and doing Easter egg hunts in the snow and coming down here to where it was just a wonderful climate. But the welcoming of the city, they just opened their arms. They recognized how important it was to have a children's hospital, and they were excited to have somebody who's got 25 years in children's hospital experience here to work to open the children's hospital.
How has your experience been, Mrs. Duncan, here in El Paso?
Very good. I had actually visited El Paso before we moved here, even considered moving here, because my parents live in Las Cruces. They had relocated from Chicago to Las Cruces about 2 years before we moved here. So I had visited, and it's beautiful. It's very different from what I even grew up with. I grew up in Chicago. So again, like Larry, had never lived very far south. And our children were excited to come here to be close to grandparents again and experience something different and make some new friends. And of course, you cannot argue with the beautiful weather.
And how old are your kids?
We have a 19-year-old and a 16-year-old.
So when we moved down, our daughter was between her sophomore year and junior year of high school. So not the most wonderful experience in terms of a timeliness for a move, but she acclimated very quickly, went to Coronado High School. She's now a sophomore at UT in Austin, and our son is a sophomore at Coronado High School.
Mrs. Duncan, do you get involved with the Children's Hospital in any way?
Oh, yes, very much. Mostly right now what my center of my universe is the Milagro Gala, which is March 7th to benefit El Paso Children's Hospital. This is the fourth year of this event, and I've worked on it all 4 years, working on the silent auction and live auction committee. This is going to be our biggest event ever. We have about 1,200 people expected at the event, and we're really excited. We have Maya Angelou coming this year, and we're thrilled to hear her speak. It's really drawing in a nice crowd, and all of the money goes back to the Children's Hospital. So that's one of my biggest projects that I work on for the hospital.
And are there still tickets available for that gala?
Very few. Last time I checked, we're capping out at 120 tables, and we had sold, as of last week, about 116. So very few tickets remaining. But we'll try and accommodate as many people as we can get into that room. So,
and so the money for that fundraiser, it all goes to the Children's Hospital.
Correct.
What do you use the money for most?
Last year, we used the proceeds from the Milagro Gala to buy a NICVIEW camera system. And for the audience who may not know what that is, it's actually a web-based webcam that is in every bassinet in our neonatal intensive care unit. And families can use a private password to give to their families so that their families at home or abroad can look in and see infants and babies in our neonatal intensive care unit. And it's been a huge hit. We use the money exclusively to pay for that. We put it in several weeks after the gala. We've had hits from as far away as Ukraine. There's been 10,000 hits since there. And it's really, really special for our parents who are in the military. If they're deployed and they're away from their child, they can look in and see. Moms can go home and feel a little bit better knowing that at any point in time, if they wake up in the middle of the night and they want to see how the baby's doing, it's right there for their view. So that's what we used the proceeds for last year.
And how many bassinets are there?
50. So we have 50 beds in our neonatal intensive care unit.
Is that NICVIEW cam, is that something that's common in children's hospitals?
It's not common across the country. In fact, we're the first in West Texas to use that system, and we're the only hospital in town using a system or a similar system. I would say about 20 to 25% of the children's hospitals nationally have incorporated it. So we're leading the pack on that.
That's great. What else can you tell us about
the technology state of the art that you have there at the hospital?
Well, we're very excited about what we have there. We opened on February 14th of 2012, Valentine's Day. We're 122 beds total. We're an all children all the time facility. So all of our specialists are pediatric trained specialists, our nurses, our therapists, our radiology technologists, all they do is take care of children. So they're keen to that. So they are constantly keeping us on our toes. Have you thought about this? We need to put this in place. And one of the things that we are patient-friendly and family-friendly. So our rooms are some of the largest in El Paso. They can accommodate two or three guests overnight. And one of the things I learned very quickly when I moved down here is that family in El Paso means something very different than family in Milwaukee or the East Coast.
Is that right?
It is a large extended family. So it is not uncommon to walk by one of our patient rooms and see a dozen family members in there. And that's good. That's great for the child. The more family you put around a child, it's shown the quicker they heal and the more advocates you have in the room for them. So our rooms are very large and take care of many families, and we encourage them to spend the night. We also have family lounges on every floor. So if parents want to get out of that room, if they feel confined by it, there's a place for them with TV, kitchenette, things like that, they can do that. From a technology standpoint, we brought in a couple really interesting items. One of the things we try to do is minimize the use of sedation for studies that don't require sedation. The most dangerous thing you can do with a child is to put them asleep and bring them back. So if you can do very little of that, the better off you are. Obviously, for a full operation or surgery, you're going to use anesthesia. But for, let's say, an MRI, where there is no real pain, but it's a little scary because it's a dark tube and it can be pretty loud, we have these things called MRI glasses that are compatible on their goggles, and they sit on the face of the child with earplugs, and they can bring their favorite DVD movie with them. And so all they see and hear during the course of the study is the DVD that they've brought to watch, which keeps them calm, minimizes the use of sedation. Now our technician or physician can buzz in and interrupt the movie, and then they see that technician's face if they need instructions to stay still or move a little to the left or right. In fact, what happens is we often have children saying they want to stay in the MRI till the movie's over when we don't want to. So those kind of advances, we have lots of distraction therapy for studies, from lab draws and things like that to try to make the experience as less traumatic and painful as possible for the child.
Painless.
As much as possible. And we have playrooms on every floor, and those are called ouch-free zones. So when kids are in there playing, they know that they're not going to be poked or prodded or anything like that that happens with them.
I have a 7-year-old and a 5-year-old, and when the Children's Hospital opened in 2012, they wanted to go play at the Children's Hospital because you guys have that forest on the first floor. I mean, it was like, let's go to the park, except for let's go to the Children's Hospital.
And you would be surprised at how many kids ask their parents, how soon can we come back, when we can come back. So what we did was with our traditional admissions waiting area, we actually converted that through a donation from the Sports Commission into an enchanted forest. So the same architects that work on rainforest cafes, same concept. So there's slides, there's climbing areas, there's trees to check things out in. The noises go from night to day, the animal noises and the lights go from night to day every 30 minutes. And it's really hard to get the kids out of there once they're in there.
I wanted to ask you about the recruiting of physicians. Have you filled all of your positions?
You know, to be a fully staffed children's hospital, there's so many subspecialties you want to have. So the short answer to that is we have not filled all of our positions, but we certainly have had amazing success recruiting down here. In fact, one of the things I heard when I interviewed down here and before I moved down here was, you're going to have such a hard time getting physicians to come to El Paso. That just hasn't been our experience. We've recruited over 40 pediatric specialists since 2010 that did not live in the area to the area. Some of those folks are coming back. They went to high school here, or they went to Texas Tech for residency or for medical school, but they always wanted to work in a dedicated children's hospital, and the opportunity just was not there. So we've got over 40 of them here. So one of the things we're most proud of is we have a pediatric neurosurgeon. I figured it would take 2 to 3 years minimum to find that individual, but it's somebody that knew the area, had worked in Albuquerque, and wanted to get back to the Southwest. And those are the kind of opportunities you got to look for and take advantage of. I mean, the national news shows do not do us any justice when all they report on is the violence in Juarez, and they don't realize that just across the border we're one of the top 5 cities in the country. And if we can get a physician on a plane, and they can fly over the mountains and they can drive around and see what we have. And if you especially bring them from the Northeast or Midwest in the middle of winter down here, you can really get their attention, and we've been very successful in doing so.
Is it the fact that it's a dedicated children's hospital that's the main attraction for them?
I think there are multiple things. Dedicated children's hospital, for sure. Brand new medical school, for sure. The whole concept of the Medical Centers of America coming together on the campus is a spirit of cooperation that includes research and academics, education, and clinical care. And that it's their chance to put their imprint on a brand new facility. So many people have come down here. Our physician in chief, Dr. Bradley Furman, who is, for all intents and purposes, the godfather of pediatric intensive care studies. He's written a textbook that's 3 or 4 inches thick that gets revised and edited every year and is used in critical care fellowships. He came down here, and that's why he wanted to come down here. And I would be remiss to say that a fair amount of the recruitment is a direct result of his presence.
I have had the pleasure of meeting Dr. Furman. He is the creator of something called the pigtail catheter.
The Furman pigtail catheter.
Yes, and I asked him how he was inspired to create that. And he said that with a normal adult catheter, it was catching or I forgot how he explained it, but for a child, it would tear, I guess, when you were inserting the catheter into, I guess it was the lungs. And so he said he had come up with this idea as if you had like a spring, kind of a coil, and you put the catheter in and it coiled in like that. It was more of a slipping in instead and pulling it out as well. And so he's an entrepreneur and he's innovative and he thinks outside the box, obviously. And that's the kind of thing that the Medical Center of the Americas is working on. We're trying to develop this biomedical innovation pipeline here in the region. And so when you're recruiting people like that, it's very exciting to the MCA because it helps us to spur this biomedical innovation mentality in the city. Do all of your physicians teach at the Paul Foster School of Medicine?
It's a choice. So technically, we're an open staff model hospital. So if physicians meet our credentialing criteria, whether they're Texas Tech employed or private physicians in the community, they can practice there. So we actually have over 235 credentialed physicians. But I would say 80% of our activity is based from Texas Tech faculty. And the community physicians have an opportunity to teach if they want to, so they can get a clinical affiliation with Texas Tech as well. The short answer is they're not all Texas Tech physicians. They all have an opportunity if they so want to teach and be part of the Texas Tech faculty. But they also have the option to come in and take care of their patients without any teaching.
Got it. The Children's Hospital is located in that east tower.
Correct.
We can all, it almost looks like a second downtown in El Paso, the way that area is growing. But you don't take up the entire tower. So what floors do you occupy?
Correct. So technically, I was not here in 2007, but I believe most of your listeners probably were. There was a vote to raise real estate tax to pay for bonds for that building. The purpose of that building was to house both the separately licensed El Paso Children's Hospital and the women and infants component of the University Medical Center. So when you look at that building, El Paso Children's Hospital uses roughly half of it, and the other half is used by the University Medical Center of El Paso, and their labor and delivery and their pre- and postpartum are in that building. But technically, we are two separate hospitals. University Medical Center is a governmental county facility. We're a private 501c3. We each have our own boards, own CEOs that we report to. So we lease space from them. So what we like to say is that we share a building and we share a vision for the campus and we share a foundation. But other than that, we're separate hospitals.
So you occupy 7 floors?
5.
So
it's 10 stories.
The top 5 floors. Right?
The top five, yeah. So, and then we have some space in the basement, and there's a build-out on the back of the building as well where our operating rooms and our diagnostic center are.
I was kind of confused because there's a Children's Miracle Network that raises money for the El Paso Children's Hospital. And then there's the UMC Children's Foundation?
There's 3 elements. Okay. So there's the UMC Foundation, there's El Paso Children's Hospital Foundation, and then there's Children's Miracle Network. And all 3 of those entities fall under the same umbrella, which is the overall University Medical Center Foundation. 2/3 of that element, the Children's Miracle Network and the El Paso Children's Hospital Foundation, raise money exclusively for El Paso Children's Hospital. and then the other third raises money for the University Medical Center. So Children's Miracle Network is actually a national program, and what they essentially do is they select one pediatric facility in each major regional market in the country, and then they have the moniker or ability to raise money under that Children's Miracle Network. So it's almost like a franchise.
Okay. And the gala, Milagro Gala, that's happening, is that an El Paso Children's Foundation event?
Yes, it is. Okay. Yes. So that's run by University Medical Center Foundation staff, which are fundraising on behalf of the El Paso Children's Hospital Foundation. It's confusing.
But from an accounting perspective, the dollars raised for the Children's Hospital are used exclusively for the Children's Hospital.
The El Paso Children's Hospital, as I understand, correct me if I'm wrong, it's the first children's hospital built in Texas in about 30 years. Was that?
It's the first separately licensed new children's hospital in Texas in about 30 years, and it's certainly the first in West Texas ever. The other hospitals have done additions or added towers to their facilities, but this is the first brand new endeavor. I believe you'll see one in San Antonio shortly.
Oh, okay. I took my daughter, my 7-year-old, to the El Paso Children's Emergency Room recently, and I was surprised how, I mean, it's the UMC entrance, but it's divided. So if you go to the right, you're in the children's emergency room. And if you go to the left, you're in the adult UMC emergency room.
And that's exactly how it's constructed. Our emergency room is the only portion of our hospital that's not in that new East Tower. And it's purposely adjacent to the University Medical Center adult emergency room because they are the only level one trauma center in the city. So even children's trauma, if it's a level one or two, which are the most severe, will come in through the University Medical Center trauma system. The patient will be stabilized, child will be stabilized there. If they need to go to our operating rooms or our critical care unit or our PEDS unit after that, then they are transferred. And technically, and this is where you get a real feel for them being different hospitals, technically that's a hospital transfer. So you have to treat that child as if you're sending them across town. That's a separate facility. And the same phenomenon occurs when a baby's born on the second floor of the East Tower University Medical Center and they need to go to our neonatal intensive care unit. That 4-floor elevator ride is a hospital transfer too. So it appears a little complicated to the public, but we have it down behind the scenes. So it's not a problem with that. So you're absolutely right. When you come into our emergency room and you go to the right, that is all children's emergency room. All we see are children there. And we've now got 5 board-certified pediatric fellowship trained emergency physicians that staff that.
It seems as though there is a tremendous surge in the science and psychology of pediatrics over the last quarter century. You've been in the business. You worked at the first pediatric hospital in Philadelphia. And so you've seen a lot over the years. What's the most major league impact that you've seen in pediatrics that is here now in El Paso?
Well, first of all, we were the largest city, we being El Paso, were the largest city in the country back in 2012 that didn't have a separately licensed children's hospital. So the separation of children's hospital medicine from adult medicine is critical. In the larger cities across the United States, that's been there for a long, long time. So here in El Paso, that's the most important part. You don't want your specialist to be treating adults half the time and kids half the time or even less. You want them to be concentrated on that. I think the other big dynamic that has really changed children's hospitals across the country has been the presence of family-centered care, the recognition that the family needs to be part of that care, that it's not just a physician deciding, that it's actually the family that needs to embrace, you know, whatever treatment plan is put in place. Because it doesn't matter how good you are clinically or how well you know it. You know, if Tia doesn't agree with what you're saying, the chances of it happening or not happening are pretty low. So you need to really bring the family in from the very beginning. We actually involve families in rounding now. So when the physicians go around in the morning, the families are invited to be part of that conversation because, quite frankly, nobody knows that child better than mom. And mom may not have a medical degree. Mom may not have a nursing degree. But mom knows something's off. You need to pay attention to that. And we've trained our staff to do that. So I would say a couple of things. It's the dedication of a private children's hospital where you're only taking care of children. It's the family-centered care aspect. And the amount of care that's now being provided with minimal invasiveness so that you're not opening the body up. The surgeries are laparoscopic. Most of them are now. Most of the diagnoses are being done with minimal radiation and minimal exposure. You do more by ultrasound because there isn't radiation associated with that. And you're doing much more on an outpatient basis versus an inpatient basis. And again, because you want that healthy family, that home-life balance.
That seems like that's changed over the last few years, because I can remember when I was growing up as a kid, pediatrics was very cut and dried. You sit in the office, you smell the alcohol, you know you don't want to be there, you get treated, you're off and running, and that's it. And things now seem so user-friendly, that's great. That's absolutely wonderful.
It's been very good. And to really highlight the example of what's being done more outpatient now, diabetes is a great example. It's very prevalent in our community. It's one of the top four big issues in El Paso, especially for children. Some of it is associated with diet. A lot of it is associated with inactivity. We're spending much more time with our thumbs on the computer and on the games than we are outside playing. And unfortunately, that leads to obesity and complications associated with that. For years, early in my career, if somebody was newly diagnosed with diabetes, they were admitted to the hospital for 3 or 4 days. And what they got all their training and activity then. Now, it's largely done outpatient. Unless the child's in ketoacidosis crisis, they don't stay admitted. And so they come back and their outpatient care is done. Now, this is where we've made a major impact and will be making a major impact in El Paso. When I got here in 2010, Dr. Bob Christensen was the only pediatric endocrinologist in town. And it wasn't his fault, but if you were a newly diagnosed diabetic, he might be able to see you in 3 or 4 months because that's how busy he was. We have since added a partner with him, Dr. Rao. 2 more are coming in July, and then a 5th part-time person will come in January. So what was 1 provider will be 4.5 and almost 5 by the end of this calendar year. That will be a major advance for us.
Can you talk to us about the census? Has the volume of patients been on par with what you projected?
It actually started much quicker than we anticipated. So we went from what was typically a census of 25 to 35 children when the services were at University Medical Center to within 2 or 3 months of opening, we were in the 60s. And so it grew very quickly, and we've been as high as 90 patients in the facility, and as low as the first day we transferred over was about 35. The average has plateaued a bit at 65 patients and is kind of hanging there. We anticipate that that will continue to grow over time, but not as exponentially as it did until we add new services. The area where we saw the most explosive growth was in our emergency department, and we anticipated 8,000 to 10,000 visits in our first year. We had 14,000. We had 21,000 in our second year, and we'll be pushing 23,000 or 24,000 visits this year. So that's where it seems like the bulk of the activity has really hit us.
And is that just because of the underinsured population that we have here?
I wouldn't say just that. I would say when mom wants the patient seen, she's going to take the baby child wherever she can get seen the quickest. Mm-hmm. And if there isn't an urgent care open or her physician's practice isn't open, that's where they end up.
Yeah, okay.
And so we are not unusual. I'd say roughly 50% of what comes into our emergency room is not an emergency, but it is children that need care.
Okay.
But most of our patients do have primary medical physicians or pediatricians or family practitioners that take care of them. It's just an opportunity to access them.
Let's talk a little bit about the gala that's coming up, because we've spent a lot of time talking about the Children's Hospital and the need for it and how the need has been taken care of so far. But the monetary aspect is where the gala comes in. And what can people expect at the gala?
Well, we have worked very hard to make this a signature event in the city. We're at the convention center because we're expecting, as I said, over 1,200 people this year. We have amazing speakers come in, and we have every year so far. We have a very large auction, 150 items, so lots of shopping opportunities and a good meal and chance to visit with everybody and friends. It's a nice night to get dressed up and support the hospital.
El Paso Children's Hospital is a nonprofit, so how important is fundraising?
It's very important. It's very important. And there's, I think there's a misconception in the public that because tax dollars built the building, that tax dollars are going to support it on an ongoing basis. And that's just not true. We are a private 501c3. So we survive based on our ability to bill and collect and the philanthropy that supports us. And I can tell you, just based on my experience across the country, the billing collecting portion becomes harder and harder every year, especially as states have to manage their Medicaid budgets. We're about a 60% Medicaid facility, which isn't the highest in the state, but certainly not the lowest in the state either. So that reimbursement, when the state ratchets down on reimbursement, that's much more pressure on the hospital to either see more patients with insurance or to raise money through philanthropy. And that's a target for both of them.
Individuals and businesses can give through the two foundations that you talked about
earlier. Absolutely.
I had read that Golden Corral maybe a year or so ago had presented a check to you guys on behalf of their customers. So do you see a lot of that kind of businesses doing things like that?
We absolutely do. The balloon campaigns for Children's Miracle Network are taken on by 40 or 50 different businesses here in town. And it's very successful. I would say two or three times a month I'm accepting a check from a local business, anywhere from $5,000 up to $50,000. And it's critical to the financial success of the hospital.
Tell us again where listeners may be able to buy tickets, as few as they're getting to be.
Yes, yes. Well, on the UMC website.
The
foundation website, yes, I'm sorry.
You can actually go to the El Paso Children's Hospital Foundation and click on giving, and there's a pop-up that will show you that you can buy your tickets and sign up from there. So that's elpasochildrens.org.
There you go.
Thank you to Larry Duncan, CEO of El Paso Children's Hospital, and Don Duncan, his wife, who is joining us today. Thank you, Dennis.
Mikasa Sukasa, guys. Anytime that you'd like to come back and talk about the Children's Hospital in more detail, maybe some new developments that are coming along, new physicians, new doctors, new equipment, new anything, we'd love to have you back. Thanks so much for coming in. And thank you, Noemi, too.
Thank you very much for having us, and we look forward to coming back.
And now from the AARP, here's Movies for Grownups with Bill Newcott.
Hi, I'm Bill Newcott, and I couldn't be more excited. We're here in Beverly Hills, California at the Beverly Wilshire Hotel for the 13th annual Movies for Grownups Awards Gala.
It seemed like all of Hollywood was on hand for this year's awards hosted by Kathy Griffin.
I am so honored to be hosting because this is where it's all going down. It's a great time to recognize real people because not everyone is 13. I happen to be a grown-up, although my boyfriend is quite a bit younger than I am.
Bruce Stern was there to collect his Best Actor award for the Oscar-nominated film Nebraska.
There seems to be an appreciation for the older people, and people are writing stories about people getting old in America now, and I think it's time that they realize if you have somebody like my character in Nebraska, never, ever let them stop dreaming.
Oscar winner Mary Steenburgen was honored with our Breakthrough Achievement Award for her surprising singing debut in the buddy comedy Last Vegas. See more of the Movies for Grownups Awards Gala on the Movies for Grownups YouTube channel and at AARP.org. I'm Bill Newcomb.
That puts a wrap on another edition of El Paso Primetime. Next week, we'll take a look at the new and innovative curriculum at the Texas Tech Paul L. Foster School of Medicine. This episode is powered by Synapse, the life sciences news digest of the Medical Center of the Americas. Thanks to my co-host, Noemi Rojas. Join us again next Saturday afternoon at 1 for another edition of El Paso Primetime.